Hey, welcome. This is Sturdy McKee, and you were listening to the Focus Forward Business Podcast. Today, I have Dan Cockrell. Dan's a Boston University alum and former All-American rugby player, which is different for an American, Dan. But began his career as a parking attendant at Disney's Epcot Center. Now, he quickly moved up the ranks and joined Disneyland Paris Management Training Program, and he eventually became the vice president of the Magic Kingdom. So throughout his 26-year career at Disney, he balanced operational duties with being a keynote speaker for the Disney Institute and addressing other clients such as USAA Bank, General Motors, United Airlines. And after leaving Disney, Dan, along with his wife Valerie, started a consulting business utilizing his experience to offer leadership and management workshops. Thanks so much for being here, Dan. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Sturdy. I always look for forward to talking to somebody and chatting about these topics.
Cool. Thanks. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you're currently working on, what you're working on now.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned in my bio, you know, I spent most of my adult life working at Disney, working my way up, 19 different jobs, lots of great experiences, worked with a lot of very talented people and learned really the right way to, I think, run a business from a leadership and management point of view. And then in 2018, I left the company and Valerie and I started our consulting business. And, you know, Disney does not prepare you to be an entrepreneur, I'll tell you that. So we had a lot to learn and about, and, you know, I think everyone understands this concept. When you work for a big company like that, you really take for granted all the resources you have at your fingertips. And when you become an entrepreneur, everything is new. Everything has to be found or hired or purchased. And so we really learned a lot about running a business and company and marketing and connecting. And we've been doing that now. We're actually, it's funny, May is 5 years. And we, when I first left Disney, I thought to myself, you know, people called, hey, can you come give a speech, do this? I was thinking, what was I so afraid of? This isn't that hard. And then COVID hit. That's when, you know, that's when entrepreneurs are tested. What are you going to do now?
Yes, sir.
You don't meet every week automatically. And when everything gets canceled, so you pivot, you find a way to do new things. And so during that time, I published my book and was able to start really create online community. We created some college courses and university courses. And then as COVID sort of faded away, we got back on the road again. So Valerie and I, we work closely together now, which has been a whole adventure itself. You know, we've been married for 30 years, but never worked together. So we've had to kind of create a professional relationship also, which is much different than a personal relationship. Valerie is with the Disney Institute for 6 years of her 16-year career. So she is a great facilitator, great speaker. Her book's going to come out this October called Manage Like a Mother, which I think is going to do really well.
I love it.
We, I think not only do we, you know, we really kind of complement each other, but when we do workshops for companies, I think we're kind of good role models. Like here's some peers, they're married, they work together, and we kind of show people what collaboration looks like. And we spend a lot of time internationally. Brazil has become a big market for us.
Really?
Brazil loves Disney. We love traveling and being in other countries. And so we spend a lot of time down there.
Nice. So what have you found to be like the biggest difference between your corporate career and running your own business?
Oh, gosh. Well, funny. There are a lot of things that are different. But then there, you know, what we teach to companies, we say, look, our approach to how we learn to do at Disney, I don't care what industry you're in. And I don't care how big your company is. You can put these fundamental building blocks in place if you want to run a great company. So I think, first of all, the things that are similar between our company now, our little mighty company in Disney, one is, you know, once you're lucky enough to have someone hire you, you want them to call you back next time and really feel like there was a great value you gave them and talk to others about the service or product you provided. That's how we grow our business. It's not through search engine optimization. It's not through Facebook ads. It is people talking to people. And that is such a powerful way to grow your business. We need to be consistent in the material we deliver, and we need to give people a wow factor. And I think that's what great companies do. They're really good at their base business, and they find a way to surprise and delight their customers. Their employees, You know, Valor and I, we are the two employees in our company. We have a couple of people contracted, but we understand what we're here to do, and we understand what our mission is, and we try to create a great environment that we can deliver that. And so that, I think that's what we have in common with, you know, Disney and other companies. When it comes to what's different, first of all, one of the hardest things about entrepreneurship is you have a blank page. You have almost too many options. You can go anywhere and talk to anyone about anything. So you really, what we found is it's about being thoughtful about where we're spending our time and resources, not only to make sure they're productive, but what are we not doing when we do other things? And I'm not as disciplined at that. I'm a pretty open-minded, curious guy. So when someone calls me, I get excited. And Valerie's the kind of one of the family that says, okay, well, hold on a second. Let's slow down, Haas. Let's really talk about, is this going to add value for us? Are we experts in this? Can we deliver this and create value with it? And so I've learned to kind of put it through that filter to not get involved with things that maybe look fun and look interesting and exciting, but don't really add to what we, our expertise is to push our business forward.
So one thing I'm interested in, I'm a big advocate of culture, and you talk about culture being kind of like the weather, or maybe perhaps like climate. It's the environment in which your team operates, right? So, and that you as a leader can influence. So how do you advise leaders to influence and create a deliberate culture for their teams?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things that go into that, but I'll give you a few of them that I think if you're out there running a business now and you say, you know what, I want my culture to be stronger. I think the first thing is this concept of common purpose. You know, companies have visions and mission statements, and usually people have no idea what they are. They can't recite them, or they have to memorize them verbatim, and it doesn't add a lot of value. But something I learned at Disney was this concept of common purpose. And so, you know, there's, I don't know, 70 plus thousand employees, cast members working at Walt Disney World. Everyone has a different job, a different role. Some people are parking cars. Some people are making cheeseburgers. Some people are vice presidents. Some people are engineers. Everyone's got a different job, but everyone has the same purpose, which is to create magical memories for guests that'll last a lifetime. And it's talked about every day, telling stories. How did you create magic today? How did you create an only at Disney moment? A couple of examples of that is, you know, the housekeepers at Walt Disney World. They come up with towel art. They leave these amazing sculptures of towel animals in people's rooms. They set up the stuffed animals and little scenes. So when the family gets back for the night, you know, they have this really fun thing they come to. For me, that's a common purpose. It's an only Disney moment. Even housekeepers can create magic. Even fast food cast members can give a cupcake to a guest and celebrate their birthday, even when it's not their birthday. And so this idea that if you can do this right, the employees of your organization should always be thinking about the common purpose. How do I make sure that this customer has the best interaction, most friendly interaction today with our organization? And while you're doing that, you're going to be doing your job, selling them an ice cream, parking their car, making their cheeseburger, running the park. And so the a lot of times the common purpose should be actually prioritized higher than the job. And it makes people get more engaged. They feel like they make a difference. It creates a commonality between the senior leadership and the frontline employees. They're all focused on the same goal, which is exciting because everyone gets to participate. So I think there's some other things there, but I think that's a really important piece of this is nobody is more important than anybody else. So this is a concept people really have a hard time getting rid of. Because we create hierarchy, and we have to create hierarchy to run organizations. But the fact is, everyone is just doing something different, and they're not doing anything more important. The housekeepers, it's vacuuming the hotel room in a resort. Their job is as important as the general manager, because if they don't vacuum everything and they leave debris on the floor or they leave a piece of hair in the bathtub, that's going to reflect directly back on the guest's concept of safety and feeling comfortable in that resort. And they may or may not come back because of that. And if the general manager doesn't do their job right and get the right resources and training in place, the same thing's going to happen. So get rid of the concept that there are people who are more or less important. Now, they may have more or less responsibility. They may get paid more money. That's, you know, that's the compensation side. But a lot of people mistake that for people's value in organizations. And I think in an organization that can recognize that everyone is just as important than everyone else, they do a really good job with this culture piece to get people more engaged, more respected, and they get better results.
Yeah, I read something recently too. I think you would like where it was talking more about startups and kind of Silicon Valley scene. You know, I'm out in San Francisco, and what they were saying though is it doesn't matter how great an executive team you've put together, your customer's experience is with your frontline employees.
Right.
And yeah, nobody cares what your pedigree is in the C-suite if their experience with those frontline folks isn't amazing.
Yeah, the executive's time, if they're, what they are doing does not translate to different behaviors and a different experience for the guest, they don't care. And there's so many things our customers don't know about our companies. They don't know our organizational structure. They don't know our policies. There's so many things they don't know, and they don't need to know because it doesn't matter to them. They are paying for an experience and or a product. And so I think it's a great point. I used to bring that up in staff meetings. We would be with the executive team. We'd come up with a great new idea, and everyone would like cheer and high five each other. And I'd remind everyone, all right, let's not celebrate too much. We haven't actually done anything yet. We just talked. Let's make sure this goes out there and actually changes something in the world. And when it does, we can high five each other.
Nice, nice. So you talk about the difference between very good and excellent. Why is this a important distinction?
Yeah, so I think it starts probably in school a lot of times. When you go to school and you get an 80% on a test, you're like, I passed, got 80. You know, I could probably do better, but it's probably pretty good. We learn to settle for mediocrity. And what I tell you is, and if you're measuring a business on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being poor and 5 being excellent, there's still 3 things in between you can rate. And anything less than excellent means you could have done something better and you could have done something differently. And look at the world today. What do people talk about? What gets attention? Really, really negative things and really, really positive things. Things that are generally bad or generally good, no one talks about because they're not exciting, they're not interesting. And what a lot of companies end up doing is they mistakenly think that very good is going to help them grow their business. Just because no one's complaining doesn't mean you're doing well. It just means that you're delivering enough. And so this idea of pushing to give, and I forget who sang that song, give them something to talk about. If people don't have anything to talk about after they've used your product or service, then you're just on the slow burn to going out of business someday because you're not doing anything special. You're just giving people what they can get somewhere else. And so what are you doing to give them something to talk about? And I've seen this play out. We worked with a company in South America that runs trains. And I looked at their TripAdvisor scores before I worked with them. And they had about 3% bad ratings. They had about 40% excellent and about 45% very good. So when I talked to their CEO, I said, you know, what's your plan? And he said, well, I want 0% poor. I don't want bad stories out there about us. And I said, is that the goal? He said, yeah. I said, oh, well, okay. If you could get those 3% bad into good, would that move the needle at all? He said, yeah, there'd be less bad stories about us. I said, yeah, but people don't come back to you because you did an okay job or a very good job. They come back and they talk about you because you did an excellent job. What if you move that 3% bad into excellent? Now you're at 43% excellent. You have all these 45% of your guests said you did a very good job. Those are the ones that you need to pull. How do you get people out of very good into excellent? And a lot of that has to do with this, these unexpected wows, these emotional connections. I read an article recently, 70% of the decisions we make are based on emotions. And I know people don't like to think that.
I think it's higher than that.
We're not rational. We are emotional people. We work with people we like. We interact with people we like. We interact with products that we enjoy and we like. We like how they make us feel. We like their message. It has nothing to do with what the product does most of the time. I mean, if you want a car, there's lots of cars out there. So why do people buy BMWs or Mercedes-Benz? It's like because they like how it makes them feel. They could get the same experience somewhere else. So anyway, that excellent is it's a mindset, and leadership has to be a little bit unreasonable. And everyone has to always be reaching for that next level. And if you do that, it's a big part of your company being moving forward in a successful way.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, Seth Godin says very good is invisible.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're invisible,
and also good is the enemy of great,
right?
Poor is not the enemy of great, because you can correct poor. We usually don't correct good. We just leave it alone and we don't worry about it because it's not causing us any pain.
Right. And that all circles back to what you said about the word of mouth. People are going to talk about you if you're remarkable, if there's something worth talking about.
Right. And those remarkable things are small things. It's the towel animal in the room. It's the little pin you give the little kid because it's his first visit. It's giving at the supermarket, giving the kid a free cookie. You know, it's like, well, how we're going to lose money giving away all these cookies. Well, no, that mom is going to keep coming to your supermarket because that kid wants that cookie. That's part of the tradition you've created. And it has a huge return on investment.
Yeah, exactly. So here's another one, and I kind of have a little bit of an issue with this one. You say the customer does not come first. John Spence, another expert I really like and has been on the podcast, says the customer's experience will never exceed that of your employees. As I said, this is a premise I kind of have a hard time with. Can you share why you would prioritize employees over in their experience over customers?
Yeah, and it's I think it's a dramatic statement to be a thought maker. They're both important, but in a leadership role, I'll use my personal example. When I was the vice president of the Magic Kingdom, you know, I had 12,000 employees working at that park, delivering individual interactions, individual transactions to over 20 million guests a year. So if I really wanted to prioritize the customer and the guest, I would be out there every day talking to as many customers as I could and try to, you know, kind of figure out what's going on with them. But I'm one person, there's 24 hours in a day. I can only go so far. So I have to figure out a way to multiply and spread out my passion, my message, my why we're running this park and what is so important. I can go talk to customers about that and talk to a couple of hundred a day out of 20 million a year, or I can really hone in on my general managers, the people who report directly to me, and make sure they have the training, they're in the right kinds of jobs, they have the support for me they need, so I can amplify their leadership. And by doing that, they go to their management teams and they role model and they're connected with me on how I run that business and how the company's culture is built. And they amplify that through their leaders. And then the leaders are able to connect in the same way I'm connecting with my general managers, their frontline employees. Those employees now, they feel like they belong. They have the training, they have the competency and confidence to do their jobs. They feel respected and listened to. And now that's where the magic is happening. So it's not my job as the vice president to be the hero and be the best leader there. And to do that, it's to make sure my general managers are great leaders. And it's their job to make sure their leaders are doing a great job. And that translates to the employee. And that's where, as you said earlier, that's where our customers interact. They interact with our employees. So it's not that the customers are important. They're extremely important. We have to understand what they want and what they need and what the hassles are. But no one knows better than your employees do. So if you can tap into them and let them be the representative of your customers, you can learn so much more about your business and make great improvements over time.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, my only real issue with that was I grew up in South Florida. Before you were running Disney, but you know, we had residence passes, season pass to Magic Kingdom and all that stuff. And I'm pretty sure when I was a little kid, my experience at Disney World was a bit better than most of the employees. Right?
Yeah.
But it was because of them. So I like how you kind of tied that around full circle. That makes a lot
another way to say it, I think, is customer first, employees always. So you're saying, hey, they're both important, but you have to make sure you're paying attention to both. But just like I'll use a sports analogy, the coach doesn't get to play the game. They don't get to go on the field. They just influence. They select the players, they came up with a strategy. They make sure everyone is motivated and understands. They put people in the right positions. And then during the game, all they can do is just yell, right? And everybody goes according to plan. So it's very similar when you're running a business.
Yeah. So yeah, the things you can manage are the plays, the players, and the culture.
Right.
So Yeah, no, that's a great analogy. I use the coaching thing all the time, which also begs the just let's go back and revisit this for a second, because you talked about the hierarchical nature of some of these organizations and what people tend to do and kind of how we've all been taught. But when it's done well, when the managers are really positioning themselves and thinking of themselves as the coach for the team, there's an accountability portion. There's, you know, all those things are there, but it's really much more of a bottom up service oriented. How can I help you to be the best player you can be?
Yep.
So what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a, and these are pretty objective things to think about. First of all, your employees, if they perform well, you're going to get the credit for that. Your ratings are going to be higher. Your intent to return is going to be higher. Your intent to recommend is going to be higher. And that's just all great business strategy. Really successful companies have return business. They retain their customers and they grow with word of mouth. So first of all, you need to understand that if and that's what your employees create. I think the other thing, the way to think about it is when you're leading an employee or a vice president is leading a group of general managers, this is servant leadership. I'm not working for the vice president. I'm working for the mission of the organization. And the mission of the organization is to create magical memories that will last a lifetime for customers. And so you take the ego out of it. You take the idea that, okay, this is a good idea, a bad idea, or this person at that level said this, and so we should do it because they're in charge, they're an authority figure. You're still accountable to the mission. And so everything you should do is, are we helping? Am I using my authority and my responsibility to help move the mission forward? And as a vice president, I had lots of authority. There's decisions I could make, but I had to make sure I made those decisions in a way that was going to improve the employee experience, improve the customer experience. And unfortunately, we're humans and we have egos. And so when we get into senior roles and higher roles in organization, we don't always listen to everybody because we have an ego and we think we're the smartest person in the room, or we figure the organization owes us or whatever it looks like. Mm-hmm. But like I said, the great organizations, they're focused on the mission of that organization. And I talked to HR when I was at Disney. I said, you know what? What if we got rid of the term vice presidents and just call us superintendents? We're there to own and manage that area until the next person who's going to come in is going to be set up to continue moving forward with that mission. And I like that. I like that idea. I wasn't there to run the place or be the most important person. I was there to help facilitate and make sure it was being run by everyone as good as it could. And I was the facilitator to connect all the dots for everyone and then let them do what they do. So it's a different way to think about it. And once again, not everyone gets it. They don't like this idea. It's like, I paid my dues and now I'm going to not have to go into the front line and worry about all that stuff I used to worry about. Cause I'm in this nice air conditioned office now and I don't have to do that anymore. I think it's a big mistake. And it's not, you're obviously not connected to the mission if you think that way.
So how do you, when you deal with clients now, if you've got somebody who's not connecting to the purpose, the core purpose and the, you know, the mission of the organization, how do you approach that? How do you get the leadership kind of on board with that idea? Because I totally agree with you that that's the path to success when we're, you know, don't deal with the egos and the secondary gains, all these things, and we're really focused on the player's success, the team's success, the customer's success, the organization, the team's going to win. The coach is going to win.
Yep. Well, great question. What we used to do is a company would call us and say, hey, we want your help. Can you come help us do this? And we'd say, yeah, let's go. And we'd jump in. We've become much smarter, I think, about this now because we know what's going to happen. And so what we have concluded is, and we were just talking to a big company a couple months ago, and I talked to one of the senior vice presidents, and she talked about how this service and culture and taking care of employees was the board of directors had told the CEO this was a priority. So the vice president found Valerie and I, we talked to her. Then we ended up talking to one of the general managers. And then when we finally got a call set up to kind of propose what we were going to do, it was two senior managers of their organization. Now, I'm not judging anyone. I'm not saying they're bad people, but it was pretty clear this was not a priority for them. If this got delegated down two or three levels before we even start a project, we knew it was doomed. And so we could have just said, hey, let's do the project, but we know what's going to happen. They're going to get frustrated because it's not getting, we're not making any progress because the executives aren't on board. They don't believe in this, or they're delegating it. They need to be personally involved. And so we nicely and tactfully told them, you know what, we're probably not for you. We've been down this road. At the end, you're going to be frustrated and you're not going to get what you're looking for. And that's our fault as consultants, because we come in and we don't help you reach your goals, then we're at fault. And we already see that maybe we're not going to be able to get you there. So this is not it. And they, I don't know what they ended up doing, but that was it. So A, you have to buy in at the right level. And depending on the size of the organization, whoever's quote unquote in charge needs to be personally involved in this and be demonstrate personal driving passion. It. And if you feel you don't have that, don't try to just go get paid if you're a consultant anyway, because it's gonna, you're gonna leave there with a bad reputation. It's not your fault, but it's your, it's still your responsibility. And then you got to make sure you talk them in and get in from the beginning. And we pitch this every time we talk to a client. We're gonna create a champions team, and we're gonna, they're gonna be our representatives to help figure out what needs to be done in your organization. Because we're consultants, we know how Disney runs, but we don't know how your organization runs, and we're not going to pretend to know that we do. So we want two or three frontline employees from your organization, and we want a couple of frontline managers, and we want a senior manager, and we want a general manager, and we want an administrative person. They're going to become our resource group, and we're going to talk to them about your goals, and they are going to represent all the employees and managers in the organization. So we make sure we're hearing all voices. And a lot of organizations can't get their head around it. It's like, wait a second, don't you want to talk to our executive team? Not yet. We want to talk to people that actually know what's going on, right. Which are your employees, your frontline managers. They're going to have great ideas. They're going to tell us exactly what's happening. We will help them tee up the plan and present to you what they want to do. And so that's the other thing we've learned as consultants. If we do everything we're doing and we leave and they can't do it, then we've not done a very good job. We have to transmit knowledge, and we have to make this a sustainable piece. And what I've found is, we both found during change management, when you want to go in and change something, if you don't get everyone engaged and involved, it won't last. We have a phrase we like to use: authorship inspires ownership. And if people get to be engaged and involved in coming up with the plan, problem solving, personally integrated, at least do a survey, or know someone who's got a voice, it's, you get a lot more traction and you have a much better chance of projects being sustained. Disney was terrible at that. A lot of companies are. We come out strong. 6 months later, no one can remember what the project was because we just can't sustain it. That's something I think a lot of organizations forget about.
Well, no, that's a great point. And that's something that can work in almost any size organization as well, getting those champions on board. When, I mean, you have a new idea as the founder, the leader, you know, something, but you've got to get those folks bought in at all levels of the organization, or it's, yeah, you're exactly right. It's simply not going to get traction. It's not going to last.
Yeah. And your title founder doesn't make people want to believe in your idea more. It just means you found it. That's all. You haven't connected with them emotionally, and you got to convince them. And once again, ego gets in the way. Well, why do I have to influence and convince them? I'm in charge. They should know that I know what I'm doing. That's not how humans work. People want to be engaged, involved, and believe.
Yeah, no, that's a very old school direct command and control kind of model that, yeah, simply isn't effective, at least anymore. But cool. Any other thoughts you'd like to leave us with before we wind down here?
Well, I just think probably the last thing here, I've been doing a lot of work with an organization that's just getting its nonprofit designation. And I'm helping advise them. And we've been talking a lot about disconnection and people being isolated. This happened way before COVID. This has been going way back. The Surgeon General just did a big report on disconnection and loneliness. And it's an epidemic. And so not just for, I think, for the health of society, but I think from a business standpoint, I think everyone really needs to reprioritize and really lean in to making really personal connections, being present. My wife and I were raising our kids, you know, there were no electronics at the dinner table. That was the rule. Everyone had to put them away so we could connect one-on-one. And I think I would just take this as a theme to everyone out there. As you're leading your organizations, you're interacting with friends and family, peers, just be there, be in the moment. You know, I can't believe how many Zoom meetings I show up to with companies and half the cameras are off. And I'm like, hey,
right.
either we're gonna have a meeting here where everyone's camera's on and we are engaged, or let's not have the meeting or have them not be on the meeting. But we're really settling for a lot less somehow and thinking we're gonna have as creative ideas and we're gonna have great relationships. We gotta make investments in these. So that's my public service announcement to everyone. Back to being a little bit more human and connecting and have those moments. And then when you're done, go back to your multitasking and all your electronics, your technology. Well, show up. And when you show up, be there. That's my message.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that. Appreciate being here, Dan. Really do. There's a lot of great insights. Thanks for being on the show.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Jordan.